Welcome to Are You Real Creatives, shaping culture through creative influence. Connect with artists that are redefining what it means to break through industry barricades and are becoming a driving force in the world by sharing their individual gifts, struggles, and experiences. Now, please welcome your host, Matt Dietz. This is Are You Real Creatives?
Welcome to Are You Real Creatives? This is your host, Matt Dietz, and today I am joined by young up-and-coming artist in the Christian music world, a pop music artist, I guess we would label him as, and he has several songs that you will have heard and records and EPs dropping all the time with some really, really, really great music. And today I am joined by Joel Vaughn. Joel, thanks for joining us on the show. Are You Real Creatives?
Yeah, man. Thank you. And thank you for the young part. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Most definitely. So, Joel, I want to jump right into this interview, and I want you to give our listeners just a brief description, you know, over the course of the next 5 minutes or so, of who you are, where you come from, the background that has led you to the point that you're at now, and some of the details about what you're doing as an artist in Christian music.
Yeah, so I grew up a preacher's kid, and we were also Air Force kids. So my dad was enlisted in the Air Force, and so we moved around from state to state a lot when I was a kid. So I was born in South Carolina. But my siblings, we were all born in different states on different Air Force bases. So my older two brothers, Altus Air Force Base, my other older brother, Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and my sister in San Antonio, just, you know, we were kind of everywhere. And so we grew up moving around a lot, and it felt like we were traveling ministers. My mom was a worship leader in our church, so she led songs and sang. And as we grew up and got older, we all kind of figured out that we were talented musically. And we, whether we wanted to or not, we were a part of the church worship team and leading and singing music. So I got my first taste of that when I was 7 years old. We were going to a little church in Alabama, and I sang a song by an artist that no one probably knows today, but that I liked a lot back then. His name was Clay Cross, and the song was called My Place Is With You. And what I did, it was like we took this little cassette tape that was a backing track and handed it to the deacon that was sitting on the stage, and he would pop it in the player and ultimately play it either A in the wrong key or the wrong side, and then I would just go for it, you know? And that's where I got my start. And as I got older, I noticed that my oldest brother played guitar and he was really good, but I didn't play any instruments. And then my other older brother, I'm one of five children. So you hear me talking about siblings, like, how many brothers and sisters does this guy have? I'm one of five. So anyway, I got an interest in guitar and drums. And I didn't have a guitar, so like when my other two brothers weren't looking, if one of them was at work or the other one was preoccupied with reading about anime or something, I would steal his guitar and go play it. So like I learned how to play guitar by listening to, you know, like late 90s rock, like Third Eye Blind and Goo Goo Dolls and stuff like that. And I learned to play in open tunings and that sort of thing. And suddenly I found myself back on the church worship team playing guitar. And most of the time playing drums, and my brother Joey would sing and lead songs, and I would back him up on drums. And then eventually we were both playing guitar together and singing together. And I moved away and went to college in the Texas Panhandle. And then that's also where I met my wife, met her in high school. We moved to the Texas Panhandle when I was in high school. And anyway, we just kind of kept going in the church. And then when I left home, went to college, I started writing a little bit of my own music, and I kept one foot in the church leading worship and another foot writing music on my own, but I was still kind of writing about girls and stuff like that, and didn't really see the two connecting. Like, one was this career thing and one was just something I served and did in the church. And so over, you know, from 2005 till about 2016, I was in the Texas Panhandle I actually moved to the Texas Panhandle for the first time in 2001, but we were kind of in and out. We moved to a little town called Dimmitt, and then we moved away to New Mexico for a year and a half to a town called Truth or Consequences. And then we moved back to a town called Clarendon in 2003. So I wasn't in the Texas Panhandle solidly for a long time until 2005. So anyway, back to that other point, I was leading worship in college, writing my own music, and then I took a job as a worship leader at a small church in that town, and just kind of, you know, got thrown into the quote-unquote family business, leading worship in church, and didn't really know who I was outside of that, and it was just kind of something I fell into because I knew, you know, I'm a singer, my mom was a worship leader, and this is just what you do kind of thing. And
sure,
didn't really know who I was outside of that. And so for a few years, I did it, but like didn't know why I was doing it kind of thing. And for a little while, I stepped away from music and leading worship for 2 years to kind of find out who I am aside from that. And it was a hard road, but coming out the other side of that, that's when I started pursuing a musical career full time. And I do still lead worship at churches and I am on staff at a church, but I have a little bit more clarity of what that is and what that looks like in my life now in 2018. So that's who I am in short.
Very cool. So two things. One, Clay Cross is the first artist that I sing a solo in church as a young kid. So I know exactly who Clay Cross
is.
That's
crazy.
So it is crazy. And we were both preacher's kids, so we have a lot in common. But second, do you still write songs about girls, or is that the thing of the past?
You know, I've written a few songs, like, to my wife, but, like, they've never made it on records because, like, the other thing is, like, even though I grew up, like, learning to play guitar, listening to, like, 90s rock and grunge rock and stuff like that, I had this dirty little secret that no one knew about up until I was older, and I was like, I don't care. I listen to a lot of boy band stuff, and so that's in there.
I can see that, man.
It's pretty evident now. I can't get away from that. You can hear it. It's all in the new music. But so, like, a few of those songs that I've written, they've never really made the light of day yet, because I just, not that I wouldn't put them in an album, I just haven't written one that I've gone, yeah, I like that, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's good. Well, at least if you're writing songs about the girls, it's about your wife this time.
That's it, man.
But it works for Taylor Swift, so.
Yeah.
You know, and go for it. Awesome. Well, so you made a move recently from West Texas. You left this out as a part of your story, and I know a little bit about you. So you're in Nashville at this point, right?
Yep.
Awesome. So how's that? What's that like? What's that? Is it a big difference between the West Texas life or the New Mexico life, making that switch to Nashville?
It's a big difference. But what's nice for me is being born in South Carolina and living, like, the first half of my life was lived in Mississippi and Alabama, and the culture and everything, like the first, you know, almost like 14 years of my life was lived in the Southeast. So I was used to it even before I got here. And a lot of people don't think that there's that much of a difference between Texas and the rest of the South, but culturally it's completely different. So for me, I assimilated right back into it pretty quickly. For my wife, who grew up in the panhandle and only lived in one town her entire life, polar opposite, it was a hard switch. So switching, like, in terms of culturally, not even getting to the music part yet, that was a little rough, but mostly because my family getting used to this environment. Also, it doesn't snow here like it does there, with the exception of today. Nashville decided to act like it was Minnesota, which is kind of weird. But yeah, so before we moved to Nashville, I had tossed the idea out, you know, 5-6 years ago, like, what would that look like? But nothing really serious. And then I was like, you know, I don't know if that's what we're supposed to do, if that's what God is calling us to do. So, like, that's a dream. It doesn't have to be anything I ever do. And if I never get to do it, you know, fine, whatever. But over from 2013 till about 2016, doors just kept opening and people just kept calling, you know, to have me come play at their church. And producers would get my number from, like, I'm like, how did these people get my phone number? I'm not mad, but how did they get my phone number? How did they get my email address? And in 2015, I was doing some work with some friends of mine who lived in Minnesota at the time. They're now in Nashville as well. They were recording artists that were currently having some success at Christian radio. And they called, you know, we did a show together and he just point blank asked me the question, why aren't you signed? And I was like, well, that's never really been a desire of mine. I mean, it was at one point, but I kind of let it die. And I'm good. I don't really want a gun for a record contract. I love my life. I love my wife and kids, or kid at the time. But suddenly, just things just kept getting put out there. And suddenly I was in contact with record labels and publishers for songwriting and stuff like that. And I found myself at bigger and bigger concerts. And I was like, okay, I either got to put the brakes on this or like figure out, is this what I'm really supposed to do? And doors just kept closing for me in the Texas panhandle in regards to like jobs and stuff like that. And I had played every conceivable church. I've probably played 80% of the churches in the Texas panhandle at this point in my life.
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot. And so in 2015, I was contacted by a record label called Dream Records. They were like, hey, we really like your sound. You have this one song that I had a friend remix. And it was, for all intents and purposes, just a contemporary, straight down the line Christian song that you would hear on radio, except for this was never played on radio. And so I had it remixed, and this record label heard it, and they were like, hey, we could do some damage with this track. You know, I know, based on our talks before, you might not be interested in a recording contract, but what if we did like a one song deal? And I was like, yeah, sure, you know, whatever. Take the song, do what you want. And they're like, well, our plan is to get it put in a little show called Dude Perfect. And I was like, yeah, I've heard about that. That's cool. And so I signed this little one song record deal, and the song gets sent out to Dude Perfect, and it just blows up. I mean, there's like, I don't know, 14 million views in probably like 3 days, which everything they do blows up, honestly.
Sure.
And today that video probably has like 40 or 50 million views. But anyway, after that, they were like, wow, this is actually more successful than we thought it would be. Spotify plays for everything you've done is like blown up. And then they wanted to talk more. Then another record label called, and then another record label called. And soon enough, I found myself sitting in meetings in Nashville, flying back and forth with different record labels in the area and just going like, how in the world did I get like what? Like it moved so fast. I didn't even know what was happening, you know, kind of thing. And at that point I wasn't trying to get a record deal. So it was just weird. I was like, you know, they're paying for this flight for me to go there, or I'm recording this project anyway. I might as well go. I'm down there kind of thing. And so after some time, I think about 7 months, I signed a deal with this record label, this indie label in based out of LA called Dream Records. And then we released my first project. And within a few months, the first single we released shot up to number 15. And we had 3 Dude Perfect single placements. And just, I felt like I was killing it. And so that's what prompted the move to Nashville. I was like, okay, I know a lot of folks that move to Nashville and go down there and they end up working at a restaurant and then being bitter and mad about their lives. And I didn't want to be that guy. And so when those doors were opening and the doors in Texas were closing, I was like, this is a sign. Like I feel like this is where God is leading us and we just got to go for it. And the worst that could happen is like everything closes up and we still have home in Texas. And so that's what brought us here. And we've been here almost 2 years. It's kind of crazy to think about that. And 2016 was super successful. 2017, I thought, was like going to ride on the high of 2016 with all of that good stuff, 2 top 20 single or top 15 singles in Christian radio, all of the placements, all of that. And then 2017 came and it felt like radio silence. And for me, that was like, oh my gosh, did I just make the biggest mistake ever? I sold my house, walked away from everything in Texas, had this amazing year in 2016 that looked like it was going to blow up, and 2017 feels like it's going down the toilet fast. Suddenly, I wasn't the new kid on the block. There were other artists that were hitting Christian radio that were just like me. I mean, like looked, sounded everything like me. And I was like, man, and they're doing better than I am. And so 2017 was a very different year than 2016. But that's all to say that things are coming together and looking very bright for us in Nashville now. So I probably answered more questions than you wanted me to in that one question, but that's where we're at right now.
That's awesome. And so if you would tell our listeners, so the music, you know, when you on this timeline, this journey, when you talk about, you know, the first song that releases to Dude Perfect, what was the name of that track, that particular track?
That track was called In This World. There was another artist that signed to a sub-label of the label I'm on. His name is, he goes by Unicron, like Transformers Unicron. And so I was like, oh, this should be good, you know. And then when I got it back, I was like, ooh, this is a really cool track. So that was 2015. That was like August of 2015. The Dude Perfect video didn't come out till probably October of 2015. to negotiating and finally signing a contract with Dream Records, I think in March of 2016.
Awesome. And then in 2016, the tracks that are hitting, you know, hitting the charts and you're hitting radio play, those particular tracks, what are the names of those tracks?
That's Wide Awake, and that's the first one that went to radio, and it hit radio in April. I mean, we like right immediately went to radio, and then that shot up to the top 15 by, I think, May. And then the track after that, the follow-up, because we didn't have another radio single we wanted to use, we did another single apart from that was a part of this current project called As You Are, and it shot up to the top 15 a couple of months later, I think in like November of 2016.
Yeah, that's very cool. So I'm aware of those tracks. I've heard them. They're great. They're great tunes. And
thanks, man.
And the music that you're recording right now is phenomenal. And your voice, you know, I've always thought that the first time I heard you, I think I heard you in a coffee shop in West Texas, walked up and said, hey, man, you got an incredible voice. To this day, the purity of your vocals are just really stunning. They're amazing. And I know that's why you're getting as much traction and as much play as you're getting is just because it's good. It's really good. Your writing's good. Your playing is phenomenal, and everything's fantastic behind it. And so what I would like to really hear is dive into more, because the whole purpose behind this show is we're creating a platform where we obviously give artists and creatives exposure. But in the process of giving exposure and an attention to what you're doing, I want to hear and I want to know the stories behind the struggles of what you've gone through to get to the point that you're at now, even with the struggles with the successes, because I know being in the industry that you're in now that you know, you mentioned the struggles of trying to make the transition physically to the location and your family trying to transition, and then you kind of laughed about the struggles musically, and we've touched on that a little bit between your story of 2016 and 17. Mm-hmm. But talk about, you know, some of the difficulties that you've had with, you know, labels and publishers even doing some of the work in Nashville. And obviously, I know that it's hard to stand out in a place like that because you're in a city full of creatives and artists. So that we have an audience right now listening in who so many people just like you or like me in the past who had these enormous dreams and had these beautiful pictures of what it's going to look like one of these days when they get a chance to move to Nashville and land on the big stage and then find out that it's not all roses.
Yep.
and I want to hear from somebody who's in that business, the day-to-day struggles, you know, even the financial struggles. Just because you've landed a record deal doesn't mean that everything lands perfectly and that all the money starts rolling in. Talk about what the industry looks like behind the scenes, even as an artist signed to a record deal. What does that look like? What is the daily responsibility? How do you put food on the table? What are the things that are tied to the benefits and then even some of the negatives that are tied to a record deal? And obviously you don't want to, you know, say anything bad about your record label or your deal. And I know that's not what I'm asking you for.
Yeah.
But just, you know, the struggles behind it all.
Yeah. Okay. So 2016, like I said, highlight year, and then 2017 is kind of like a low blow, but I saw all the signs moving that direction probably by January. When I signed my record deal, it was not a traditional deal in a sense. It's actually super beneficial to me in the long run. Like most people, when they sign a record deal, they sign a publishing deal and they sign usually a management contract. I did not have to sign a publishing deal, so I got to retain 100% of my publishing, which a lot of artists out there are probably like, what? How do I do that? Well, chances are you probably can't. So I retained 100% of my publishing and then my recording contract. There's a lot more to it that I can't get into with that. Because I was able to land that deal and because of the label that I'm at, I have to cover the expenses to pay for my records. And I had not been producing my own stuff. I had been working with my good friend David Tulene, and I have other people that mix and other people that master. And so all these things, they cost money. People got to get paid. So at the end of the day, you're all of a sudden realizing, oh man, like all of the money I'm making out on the road is not enough to pay for that and pay for living. And so, like, I mean, we're talking like cost up into $20,000. It's not to finish a record. I mean, like, $15,000 to finish this last EP, and that's just a number thrown out there. Probably more than that, especially when you count things like promotional materials, count in videos that you have to produce for the singles and stuff like that. So you suddenly figure out, like, oh man, this is a lot harder than it seems on the outside. And you kind of get jealous of other people, like, man, I wish I had a 360 deal because I wouldn't have to pay for all this. I wouldn't get any money in the long run, but I wouldn't have to front the cash to make this happen. And so there's a lot of things that can take root if you let it. Everybody's on a different journey here in Nashville. Some people that would hear this podcast probably go, man, I would love to keep 100% of my publishing. It's like, well, would you also love to have to pay for your records? So everyone has struggles. So what that ends up looking like for an artist like me, and honestly, this is what a lot of indie artists have to end up doing. And sometimes even people you hear on the radio. I am people you hear on the radio. Sometimes that looks like taking a day job and not being entitled to the point that you think, I'm too good for this. I've moved on. I have a degree. And that was the hardest pill for me to swallow. I didn't think I had that much pride up until I realized I'm broke. I've used all of my money to pay for this record and to stay out on the road. And this Kickstarter thing that I'm doing is not going to make, because the way people perceive crowdfunding, they look at it like it's a handout and not, depending on how you approach it, they look at it like a handout sometimes and not like, oh, I'm just pre-ordering a record. So for me specifically, the writing on the wall was in January of 2017 when I had a Kickstarter that, while it funded, it wasn't a Kickstarter, it was an Indiegogo campaign. While it funded, it was not enough to do anything except for pay for my mixing bill. And so that was like, well, that bill is left on my porch and I have to take care of it. And I did. But that meant calling friends and going, hey, I need work. Like, I've got to do something to pay for food. Like, I've got to buy diapers. I have a newborn son. So I had a buddy that had a sheetrock business. I did sheetrock a couple of times. I ended up leading worship at churches more often. Just anything I could do to put food on the table and pay bills, all of a sudden, like, that became something I hadn't struggled with for years. Because living in the Texas panhandle, we had the nice cushy jobs, we had the nice home, we had the nice cars, all of the above. And you look at people in the industry and you think that it's this whole, like, oh, you get signed, you're going to be on a tour bus, you're going to, like, just be on the radio all the time, everyone's going to love you. And that's not the case. It just isn't. And so when you get to a point where all of a sudden you're having to work as hard as you did in college, you know, or even before, and radio is not liking the singles that you're throwing their way, and you're just like, man, what is all this for? Because you go from one end where, for me, I was in the Texas panhandle, living there comfortably, had a nice house, sold it, had a lot of cash at hand, was killing it at radio. It seemed like everyone loved what we were doing, to moving to Tennessee in an apartment. Now I'm doing, like, side jobs, things that teenagers, that's the way you look at it. You're like, man, this is work for teenagers. This isn't like an adult job just to get by. All of a sudden, you can find yourself in a place where you're very angry and very, very bitter if you're not careful, if you don't see the whole reason behind all of it. And as a person who thought that he didn't struggle with pride, all of a sudden I realized I did, because I did not want to sign up to, you know, do, what's it called? Going in and being a substitute teacher, you know, like those kinds of things. I have a friend who has more number ones than I've ever had, which is one. I've never had a number one. He's had several charting hits, and he is a bus driver right now, you know? Wow. So, like, this grand illusion is just that. It's an illusion. Mm-hmm. People got to do what people got to do to pay bills. But there's not a single person that's here that's still doing it that's bitter about the fact that sometimes they have to do something they don't want to do. And I can't speak for the mainstream industry, but for, you know, a few of us in the Christian industry, it's not all it's not all roses. It can be hard. But the reality of it is, like, if you're passionate and you love what you do and you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that you're called to do what you're doing, the hardships and the struggles are completely worth it. And I mean, you get little glimmers and you get little moments. It's not all bad. It's not all amazing either. Like last year, I remember I was at a festival in the Northeast in Pennsylvania, and I was just at a super low point. I was like, man, I'm thinking about packing up and moving back to Texas with my tail between my legs. This is just not at all what I thought it was going to be like. And 1 o'clock in the morning, my voice is almost gone. I'm like, I don't even want to sing right now. Singing hurts. It's not fun. This is stupid. Can I go home? And that's the point where you're like, you forget, like, oh, you did this because you want to change people's lives. And you did this because you want to share something that you know changed you. But you forget about that when your circumstances suck. So I'm in Pennsylvania, 1 o'clock in the morning. I had a car ride with a few friends that was tense, to say the least, 12 hours from Nashville all the way up there. I just want to go home, you know, but I'm like, I'm contracted to work here. I've got to do this. And I'm standing side stage. I get up to do my bit, and this band for King and Country had just finished singing to like 60,000 people, and 1,000 or so of those kids just kind of walked from that tent from that open stage to our tent. And I start singing, and I'm like, yeah, this is a little bit of fun. This is good and all. And I pull an ear out, and I start singing the song that I have called All Things New. And what comes out of my mouth, I didn't think about, because I'm like, what if these people don't even know my music? But I get to a point in the chorus where I stop, I stuck my microphone out, and I was like, you sing. And all 1,000 people were singing my song right back at me.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, holy cow. Like, that gave me chills. And, you know, after that, had people come by and tell me how my song that was on the radio impacted their lives, and how they had, you know, felt unworthy of love by others and by God. And that to me was like, dude, wake up. You know what? Sometimes life sucks. Sometimes you have to go paint. Sometimes you have to go scrape gum off the sidewalk. Sometimes you have to go sing at that church that literally tells you, if you suck, we're going to stop payment on this check. Like, like that actually happened to me last year. And I have a buddy that was sitting there that watched it happen. When those things happen, it feels like, I don't want to do this anymore. But then when you get little glimmer of hope, like little moments like that, and you remember why you're doing this, all of a sudden you remember this is all worth the price that you pay for it. So,
yeah, for sure. Well, and then too, this is exactly why for every interview that I have with people, and we promote their music and I tell people where to find it, I always tell our audience to go buy the music, go purchase the music. Don't just stream it on Spotify or whatever, because these are the things that, you know, the artist deals with. And I think it's so good for our audience to hear stories of the struggle and what artists are going through, because, you know, as an audience, we have the privilege and the ability to hear and listen to music that moves us. And, you know, we may be affected by your music, and yet listen to it for free on Spotify. And the artist all along is going through the struggle, trying to make the ends meet and doing whatever they can to be able to have their music on a platform where it can be heard, and yet doing other things to support and sustain families. And the struggle is real. It really is. It's a legitimate struggle. And I love hearing the stories behind it, because what happens is it creates an emotional connection. And the audience, as they're listening to your story, they know what's going on behind the scenes. And they realize, man, it's not what I thought it was. It causes them, in a moment of empathy, to go out and purchase the music. And that's what I want to invite our audience to do right now. As soon as you get done listening to this interview, go straight to iTunes, go straight to Google Play, go straight to Amazon, and purchase the music from the artist while your heart's connected to them, knowing exactly what they're going through and the struggles that they're entertaining, just to be able to produce music that moves you out of a place of brokenness into a place of healing, and out of a place of hiddenness into a place of identity. You hear the stories and you know what's happening. Go buy the music as it moves you. Go buy the music as the story moves you, because what you're doing is supporting a ministry. And you hear the heart behind it. You hear the ministry aspect behind it, that this is what's actually happening. This is not just a song that's hitting radio that really has no depth to it. It's a song that has a story behind it. And not only that, but it has a family behind it. It has an artist behind it that's doing it for the right reasons. And man, I just love hearing your story. I actually love hearing your struggle. And I feel like what you're doing is you're breathing life and wisdom into an audience of creatives who may eventually take the same path. And so some of your stories are actually giving them some sort of idea of what they can encounter and what they can expect and be prepared, even more prepared than you were walking into it. And so I love hearing that, man.
Well, and then another thing I'd like to quickly add is what's so awesome about the culture in Nashville on the positive side of things is sometimes negatively we forget, like we think that we're competing against each other. And naturally when you're going for radio, there is this competition aspect to it. But if you go into it thinking that that's how it is, like, oh, this other guy can't get this chart topping hit because if he does, then I'm going to get edged off the chart. It's not like that. Everybody wishes the best for everyone and everyone wants to help everyone get a win. I've experienced that this year where I didn't really experience it in 2017 because I didn't know as many people, but I've written at probably every record label's lobby or Christian record label's lobby writing room this year and or this past year at the end of the year anyway. And we all have the same goal. Like for us as Christian artists, we all want to see people's lives change. We all want to see people come to Jesus and get saved. Like that's the goal. And for someone like me or, you know, any of the other artists, if we're all in it for the right reasons, we don't care if we get a top 20, a top 10, a number one or whatever. If the other person has a song that connects better with an audience and it's changing people's lives, man, that's something that we should all applaud, whether it's ourselves or whether it's for someone else. And that idea is fostered by most of the industry. I would say all of the industry on the Christian side. And yeah, you know, things can get, it seems like things can get political and there are artists that you're like, you know, how did they get where they're at? And, you know, but the best thing to do is just not question it and not think about it because it's not going to bring you in a good place anyway.
Sure.
And just do what you do well and then praise when other people have success because their success means that other people are coming to the kingdom of God. And so that's the place that I've had to learn to get and to humble myself and to wrestle with my pride because whether it's my song that's number one or whether it's their song that's number one, if it's connecting with an audience and if it's leading people to Jesus, you know, it's a win. So
yeah, absolutely. That's so good, man. So good. I really appreciate your story. I really appreciate your heart and the ministry behind what you're doing. And I just want to thank you for the opportunity to just have this conversation with you, a really candid conversation and the way that you opened yourself up and the vulnerability that you showed, transparency that you showed in this show. I appreciate it. I know our audience appreciates it. And once again, I just want to connect people to your music. So go buy his music. Go buy Joel's music, Joel Vaughn, on iTunes, Google Play, Amazon. I'm sure it's available on all the streaming platforms, but please go purchase the music. Please do that. If you're somebody who enjoys this podcast, you enjoy what we do and how we connect with creatives, then do me a favor and go buy Joel's music today. How can our audience get connected with you on websites and social media? How do they find you?
The website is joelvonmusic.com. Facebook is facebook.com/joelvonmusic. Twitter, same thing, twitter.com/Joel Vaughn Music, all one word, all lowercase, on all of those. And Instagram, instagram.com, or just find my username, Joel Vaughn Music. So, yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. So, get you connected. If a church wants to reach out to you or some sort of platform wants to reach out to you to bring you in to do concerts or have you as a part of something that they're doing, as an organization, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Right now, the best way is to go to joelvonmusic.com/booking or just go to the website and click on the booking tab and enter your information.
Awesome. Very cool, man. Joel, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your story and sharing your struggles with us, man. It's just been such a good time.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Absolutely. So thank you guys for listening in and tuning in again today to another episode of Are You Real Creatives. You can go from here to areyoureal.org and you will see the show notes. You can find the information on how to connect with Joel further,
All of his information will be listed there with handles on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. His website will be listed there. You can connect with him there, rureal.org, or directly at the mentioned tags that Joel has mentioned with us today. You can connect with me on at Dietz Official on all forms and all platforms of social media, at Dietz Official. But again, go to rureal.org to listen to other shows. We have other platforms, podcasts on business, podcasts on success, podcasts on fitness, and we're building quite a repertoire of shows that are available for your listening pleasure and to help you in your life to move forward and things that you're after in your pursuits. So God bless. Thanks for listening in. And this has been another episode of Are You Real Creatives with your host, Matt Dietz, and Joel Vaughn joining us today. You guys have an amazing weekend, amazing time, and we will see you on the next episode. God bless.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Are You Real Creatives? Your next step is to visit rureal.org for more resources and show notes based on today's episode, as well as to connect with your host on social media. We look forward to you joining us next time as we shape culture through creative influence right here on Are You Real Creatives?